everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. Today I have got a very special guest all the way from Germany. I've known this particular person for quite a few years now, and I've seen her go from being a good professional athlete to a phenomenal professional athlete. So I would like to welcome Daniela Bloemel. Welcome, Danny.
Good morning, Belinda. Thank you very much for having me, and also for this really nice introduction.
Oh, you deserve it. And funny, it continually spins me out when I speak to anyone in Europe when you say good morning. Often with my team calls with Challenge Family, they're on a Monday night, and of course they're just starting work. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning, but for me, you know, it's at 6 o'clock at night. So it's always so weird that we're just that day ahead of you guys. But yeah, it's what, 10 o'clock in the morning over there right now on Monday morning. Thursday morning.
For you, it might be 1 o'clock.
And yeah, 1 o'clock exactly. Yeah. You know me too well.
With my coffee for real. So this actually is perfect.
Well, as I was saying to you before when I first called, it's supposed to be Coffee Calls with Belinda, and it still is for a good chunk of the time. But now that I'm interviewing more and more European pro athletes, it's always the way that it's morning for you, so you've got your morning coffee, but it's nighttime for me, so I've got my little sneaky glass of red. But it seems to be working quite well now, so I'm going to keep it rolling at that for the foreseeable future.
You deserve it for sure.
Thank you.
I just actually got back from my morning swim, and you might remember Daniel Schmoll. He was there.
Oh yes, of course, yeah.
And I told him, "Oh, I have to hurry up. I'm having a podcast with Belinda." And he said, in English?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so. I don't think she wants to talk in German."
German.
But he said that you really like to talk German. So what I was thinking, as I am the first German you are interviewing, I guess.
That's right. You definitely have that crown, yes.
It's actually the perfect opportunity to show your German skills.
to sprechen Sie Deutsch. Well, Danny, meinen Deutsch ist nicht so gut. And seeing that I'm not getting back there this year, although if my homestay family that I've stayed with for the last, I think, coming up, I don't know, close to 20 years now, something like that, if in Roth, if they were listening to this, they would be laughing, because I think I have promised them now for at least 12 years. I have promised that 1 year I will eventually come back to Germany and I will be able to speak fluent German. It has not happened yet because you all speak English too well. You make it too easy for me. That's been the problem. I blame you.
Well, I will do my best. I can't do it as fast as you, but I will do my best. And
I promise I will not speak too quickly. But, you know, as I said, your English is fantastic, Danny. You should be proud. Nearly all the German athletes I speak to, I think because you travel so much, your English is fantastic. So you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, actually, I'm losing all the other. Back at school, I also spoke French quite well, but it's gone. So, well, I have to stick to English. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's right. Well, I'm glad that you're speaking English, because my other languages are terrible. So at least you can speak English. Now, Danny, how has it been for you in Germany? I mean, when I've been speaking to athletes all around the globe, obviously we've been talking about what's been going on this year, which of course has been the craziest year for all of us. Where's Germany at right now in terms of getting back to normality?
Well, define normality, but
yeah,
I guess
true.
We're on quite a good way back. I think actually it was pretty much the place to be, because of course on the one hand everything changed from today until tomorrow, but yeah, actually, if I look at the other countries, I think we really can't complain. So we could still go outside, which is something I just cannot imagine not going outside. So yeah, that was probably especially in that at that time of the year, which is my favorite time, spring, and yeah, when everything starts to live, you just want to go outside. So I think we really cannot complain, but of course there are still a lot of things that are not normal. Like, for me, the most frustrating thing from the beginning was the school.
Yes, of course. Yep.
My son is in the third degree of primary school now, and since March he's been there three times. So today actually is a very special day. He's there for the third time now today.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So he's back at school now?
Yeah, today.
Today was first day.
Third school day. And next week, actually, the school is starting like normal. So they open it. But it's only 2 weeks until the holidays. So
okay. Oh, no.
Yeah, pretty much the second half of the school year is gone, you could say.
Gone. Yeah. Yeah, look, it's been the same here too. And, of course, your son, Marlon, he's 9 years old. And they love school because that's where their friends are. They enjoy school. They enjoy routine, particularly at that age. So I know that a lot of the athletes, for example, Luke and Beth McKenzie over here, who have two young girls, that was a big issue for them as well when schools were closed. And it's really difficult. So I've met your son many times, and he's a very good boy. So I think you're lucky that you've got a really good young boy. But he must be really excited to be going back to school, even if it is only for 2 weeks.
Yeah, he definitely is. And like I said, this was the most frustrating or most saddest yep. for me to see, because I think it's an age where he really needs other kids around yes. him. And yeah, of course he missed his soccer football training and yeah, just his friends, and he wasn't allowed to go seeing his friends. And that homeschooling and all this, it was just very hard to see. And I don't know, when all that started, I wasn't in top shape, but I was in quite a good shape already, and ready to get the season started at Challenge Salou. So pretty much done with the winter preparation, and yeah, from one day until the other day we were sitting at home and trying to do the homeschooling thing. So everything changed
It was a pretty dramatic change in a very short amount of time. I know myself, I still remember it clearly. I was commentating at the Mooloolaba Olympic distance triathlon, which is a huge race here on the Sunshine Coast, and that was mid-March, and we basically got that race in and then everything just shut down, and it was every race was being cancelled left, right and centre. And I remember just sitting down and thinking, is this actually really happening? I think it took all of us at least a good 2 to 3 weeks to realise that this is real and it's really going on. But it was interesting to chat to you earlier when you said that, you know, obviously at the beginning there was nothing but frustration, but then I think once you came to terms with it, it was just about focusing on what you were able to do. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I never had a problem to find motivation for training, but still, because, and that's actually quite a nice thing. So I felt that I really do it because I just love to do it. So that was actually quite a nice thing to experience. But yeah, of course, the frustration, like, I don't know, I guess everyone is different. So it's, I think that the hard part is that it's not something that you can draw on experience. So you have to, it's a roller coaster every day.
Yeah.
And one day you think, okay, maybe next week there will be some good news, and it's going to be back to normality. And then you think there might be no races at all this year. I don't know.
No,
it's very tough.
I think that's been the hardest thing for all athletes, because if it had been a situation where they actually said to you, okay, I'm telling you all now, there'll be no races in 2020, I think then at least you can all get your head around it, plan appropriately, and then focus on 2021. Yeah. But I think the not knowing and having some races, yes, they're looking likely to go ahead, then no, they're not, I think that's what's causing so much frustration, and not just with professional athletes and racing triathlon, but with every job and every facet, and even people wanting to travel overseas for holidays or for work. That's the frustrating thing, just not knowing. And at the end of the day, we still don't know. That's the biggest or the hardest thing for me, you know.
Definitely the hardest thing. Last time, that time of the year, I already had four races, four middle distances on my...
Races done. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
It would be Ironman Frankfurt, which would be my first main race.
Full distance race, yeah. And when was that supposed to be?
That was supposed to be next week.
So that's next week. Wow. It's crazy.
Goals being postponed and still, I mean, actually you gave me my motivation back last week when we were texting about Challenge Submarine, which might be at least a pro race. Like, I mean, I would like to have it normal and for everyone being able to race, but right now I would be just really thankful if there is any race. So
it's exactly
great.
It's looking good for the championship, but as a pro race, and I think the whole team at Challenge, they realize the struggle that most professional athletes are going through, triathletes are going through right now. So if they can look at putting one on, then they will. I mean, we're making the decision at the beginning of July, but I am crossing my fingers, toes, and everything else that race goes ahead.
Yeah, same here. that would be so great if Challenge Family could organize that.
Absolutely.
Because that somehow it's only 10 weeks, which is a period you can control somehow. So
yes.
We are keeping training on quite a stable level, but still have room to build up. But we haven't started. I want to do the race specific training, but we are not waiting, but we are working on the weaknesses. But I think the most important thing is to stay mentally hungry. If you train the whole time, you will be tired when it's actually starting again. So I think that's important. So not to train too much, but when you know in 10 weeks there will be a race, makes it a lot easier.
It's really interesting you say that, Danny, because of all the athletes I've been speaking to, that's exactly what their coaches have been getting them to do, is just getting them to a level, a really solid base level. So not your normal base level, but a really solid base level. So putting in a few test sessions every now and again, but nothing too crazy. But then, exactly, when you actually know and you've got X amount of weeks out, this race is definitely going ahead, then you've got time to do those race-specific sessions. But you're dead right. It's all about keeping that hunger and not going too crazy. So talking about that, have you done any of the Zwift races that have been up or any of the online racing that's been going on? I mean, some athletes seem to love it and there are other athletes that are like, no, it's just not my cup of tea. I'm not interested.
Yeah, no. To be honest, I can understand that you need or you feel – motivated by these races or by doing races every once in a while, but to be honest, I just want to be ready when it's
when the real thing's happening. Exactly. Yeah. No, you're like me. I'm old school. I'm the same.
Yeah, me too. And I at the beginning I really had enough challenges in my everyday life. So
yes, exactly.
It's like being on Zwift, but I can totally understand if athletes are looking for things like that. But I've got a new coach since November. It's Mario Handling from Frankfurt, and so we actually already changed a lot of things, or my training did change quite a bit, and I didn't need like new virtual races or anything. So we still got enough work to do.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that's motivation itself. So you've already had some great big changes this year.
Yeah, and actually that was also a reason why I was so frustrated in the beginning. Yeah. Like I said, it wasn't the top shape, of course, it was March, but I was still already feeling very well prepared after. So we've really been working very good in the winter, and I was just, yeah, happy to show, and I had some really nice races planned, of course. So, yeah.
And things changed. But yeah. Danny, obviously I know I've met you many times now, and I've seen you in Challenge Roth, but I don't really know that much about your past. So did you grow up in a sporty household? Were you always into sport? Or is triathlon something you took up later in life? Were you ever an age grouper and then turned to professional triathlon? I tried to do a little bit of research, but I couldn't find too much on your history.
Well, no, I grew up with the sport, so I was a swimmer as a kid. I've got a swimming background, actually, and started with triathlon, or I did my first kids triathlon when I was 11 years old, and then I did swimming until 14, 15, and from there on I started doing the short distance and also like the German Bundesliga and some non-drafting Olympic distances. But the real idea to become a professional, or actually to have a professional license, this was the first idea, was in Nusa. So I did after, so actually at your home.
No way!
Because after school, that was in 2008, I spent 8 months in Australia. And the last 2 months I did some training. So that was when we first met in
Nusa. That's right.
Yeah.
I can barely remember that. What year was that, Danny?
That was must have been 2009.
Wow.
And actually that
I can't believe I didn't remember that. That's crazy.
That was the beginning, actually, because yes. I found out that it's really nice to combine traveling with training and just that kind of lifestyle. So that was when it first came to my mind that I want to try this out for a few years. But 2 years later I I was pregnant, and so this was the real start, because I was supposed to come into the newcomer team of my main sponsor Erdinger Alkoholfrei. And then I had to tell them that they need to wait another year.
Just have to wait a little bit.
I would want to come back. And then it all, actually the pregnancy was the first time when I really felt like missing the sport, because I grew up with it, but never did it like, I didn't do it professionally, but I felt that I really miss it. And after that I did my strength has always been on the longer distances. So I did my first long distance in 2012, and then I was in the professional team from there on, from 2013, and until today it's my main sponsor. And
I know, actually I was going to talk about that a little later on in on the call. That Erding has been, I know it's been your sponsor probably long. It's your longest standing sponsor, I would say. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's pretty impressive. Now, what age were you when you did your first full distance triathlon?
Well, pretty early. I was 23.
Yeah.
And that was because I was on the, pretty much on the step whether I can do it or whether I can try it as a full time athlete, or if I have to do something else. So to have Marlon, he was 1 year old, and triathlon, so there wouldn't fit another project in my life. Yeah. So, I wanted to try if I can do it or not. So I tried the full distance, because I think it changed a little bit, but back at the time it was that you kind of have to do the full distance to be in the team, or it was rather it changed a little bit, but I mean if I could change, I would probably try, if you look at it from the sporting perspective, I would probably, looking back, I would probably do three years more on the shorter distances.
On the middle distance, I don't think
the question really is there, because I wouldn't be here if I had tried. So I'm really happy how everything has unfolded.
And it doesn't seem to have done you any harm. I mean, definitely the full distance is your distance. I mean, you're definitely, you're a great athlete over the middle distance too. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, you've won four full distance races now already. How many full distance races have you done all up?
I think 14 or 15.
14 already. Wow. And four wins, of course.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, for me personally, because I was there, and I've been in the sport now, Danny, for, 23 years, maybe a few more. One of the most spectacular finishes, whether it be male or female, had to be 2018 Challenge Roth. Yeah. That finish between you, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. That's ridiculous. Stop it. That finish between you and Lucy Charles Barclay was nothing short of phenomenal. Will that go down as one of the greatest races you've ever had?
Yeah, definitely. So if I was able to actually draw my perfect race, this might be
the closest one.
Always, you never have 100% in every discipline. So of course I could have swam a little faster, and maybe nutrition could have worked better. I lost it after the first hour on the bike. But how the day unfolded and how Lucy helped me to push myself to my limit. This is I think what it's all about. And my whole family was there, and it was just perfect conditions. And if I was able to draw the perfect race day, I think, and it was Roth, of course. So
it's always pretty special.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was there when Chrissy Wellington set the fastest time. I was there when Jan Frodeno set the fastest time, and they were both incredible. Honestly, they were phenomenal. But for me personally, like you said, for me, racing is all about racing and pushing yourself and having other athletes push you to your absolute best. So for me personally, the race between yourself and Lucy Charles Barclay in 2018 far surpasses any race that I've ever witnessed. 9 seconds, I think, was in the end. 9 seconds. And I still have it vividly in my memory, the both of you crossing the finish line, of course, you first and then Lucy, and just collapsing. And honestly, I know that picture. I've seen it a million times, and it was absolutely incredible. Incredible. I admit I cried, but because I was just so, I think the stadium at that particular point in time was just so electric, and none of us knew who was going to take out the win. And I think it was just such a relief. I mean, that's why I think we all just cried at the end, because it was it was exhausting. It was just incredible, really incredible.
Funny, that's of course a very good memory.
And of course, wasn't your fastest time? I mean, I know times are. I've never been a time-based person. I'm not saying they're not relevant, but to me, it's always about finish position, irrelevant of time. Yeah. But I mean, I think you went 8:43, 42. I know your fastest time is 8:42. That's pretty quick, Danny.
Yeah, thank you. Well, at that year in 2018, it was a little bit about time, because I said before the race I want to break the German record, which
was, that's right. And what was the German record
at that time? I think of 8:47.
Okay.
And then, yeah, of course, four months later already, Laura Philipp, and 1 year later Anna Haug. Got a new record, which is a lot faster again, a lot quite, I think, 8:31 or something. But like you said, it's usually it is not about times, but it's about the race. But at that year, somehow it was, I just felt that I can do it, and I wanted to yeah, of course, it was a little bit more pressure for me. But especially that point made it that I knew I can do it, and then it was a race like that. It was very special for me. Yeah.
It's interesting you talk about that, and again, as I said, you know, times, you know, I don't think they should be the sole focus, but definitely, you know, to be the fastest German. And even though you've just said that time's been broken again by Laura Philippe and also Anne Haag, but at the end of the day, you started the ball rolling. So it's pretty incredible. You know, you set a new benchmark, and this seems to be exactly what's happening, in, particularly for the women in long distance racing right now. ever since we had Chrissy Wellington, who said, you know what, we need to up our game. And since that day, the women have been upping the game, you know, obviously with Daniela, again, everyone. And it's almost like you're all realizing now as women that maybe you just weren't pushing yourselves or getting out of yourselves what you could. And now it's like, you know what, no holds barred, new benchmarks, and we are going to go faster. And to see the women's racing over the last 10 to 15 years, it's been truly unbelievable, the difference. You know, I remember the times when it was amazing for a female to break 9 hours. Now it's like, well, that's just the done thing. That's just, if you don't do that, then what are you? So I think it's incredible. So we, in some ways, I'd like to say times are not relevant, but on the other hand, I think that they're important because they set new benchmarks. And right now, German long distance triathletes are the greatest triathletes in the world. There's no doubt. So it's pretty incredible. What are you doing over there? Why are you so good? Do you know what the magic answer is here? Because, you know, obviously we know that Chrissy Wellington, and we know that the UK athletes are also very, very good long distance athletes, but right here and now, it's the German females that are dominating long distance triathlon.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. I think it is a little bit what we're just talking about, that other athletes are helping you to push yourself to your limit. So, of course, it is not about times, and you cannot compare the races, but actually every day it is about time. So you're training.
Yeah.
And always looking at your watch and
watches. Yeah.
Comparing. And I think I'm trying not to, because I'm rather a race person, not so much a training champion, I would say. So I'm trying not to be influenced by that too much, but of course it also helps to be motivated. So, and to really push myself, that if you see, when you see there, the others are so, getting so strong, you have to do the same. So
exactly.
Still, you have to do your own, or go your own way, of course, in training ways. But of course, I want to be one of the best in the world, and that's why I'm doing it every day.
No, it's working, because I think about Kona last year. It was the German females that were really dominating. I mean, you had the second fastest bike split, just the second fastest, behind Laura Philippe. You two were phenomenal on the bike last year, and I was at home here, and I don't think I left my computer screen all day watching, and it was fantastic to see. We have an expression, you know, took the bull by the horns, and you just went with it. And you finished in ninth, but for me, in this day and age, to finish top 10 at the Ironman World Championships it puts you in a special group. But you changed the race by the way that you rode, and also Laura as well. Was that the plan? Did you expect to be up at the pointy end of the field so early on, and did you expect to ride that well? I mean, I know you're a fantastic bike rider, but we're talking about the best female athletes in the world here.
Well, actually, the plan was to swim faster.
A bit faster, yeah, okay. Fair call.
not having to ride.
So hard.
Of course, the other plan, or the main plan, was to be in the front after the bike or as close as possible. And for me, of course, the biggest challenge, or I think for most of us, it is to bring it all together. And the run was, I didn't have a good run, but still I was very happy with that race because it was only my second time in Kona, and the first time was a disaster. So 3 years earlier in 2016, I ended up in hospital and was last pro female.
Wow, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I did have a little trauma from that. And yeah, I wasn't sure if I can do it at all. So I was really doubting before if I can, if it's going to happen again or whatever. So I was happy that I saw that I can do it, and next time I will try to do the first plan to swim faster and to be in front from the beginning, and then maybe also have some power left for the run. So that would be
right.
For February.
Well, anyone that knows you, Daniela, knows that you are an exceptional runner. So, and Kona is one of those funny races that it really does take time to adapt and to work that race out. So yeah, I have no doubt that you'll be back there and you'll be able to get that run that we know you can have. Now, speaking about Kona, obviously now with the announcement that we're having two world championships next year. Obviously, Kona this year has been cancelled. So next year in February and also in October. So will the plan be, and this is, it's interesting because it's going to be the first time for Europeans, you know, you're going to have to train through winter. I know everyone on this side of the world is all excited about it because finally they get to train throughout summer. But what will this be like for you if you are planning on going to Kona next year twice? It's going to be very interesting for all the Europeans and how they're going to prepare for racing in February.
So that's a really good question. And it is, of course, Kona in February is a big challenge for us. But I'm happy for any race happening in the next future. So,
exactly.
I wouldn't complain if there are two world championships because, first they have to happen at all. And secondly, I mean, it's the same for everybody. I mean, there are like 10 or 15 pros in a really good position who are already qualified and who can maybe, if there is a race for October, a qualifying race for October 21, they can do that now and be already being qualified for both. So I think that's the best position. But I have to qualify for February, have to do another qualifying race for October. So I would do four long distance races in about 10 months, which I usually would not do. But but from now, I think I will definitely try to qualify for February, see how I can go there. And maybe Ironman will find another qualifying modus because I don't think I'm the only one. They do have to find another idea for the pros. But like I said, it's not just my problem.
Exactly. And it's funny you've mentioned a really important point there because for a lot of females, they're used to doing, a minimum of 2 to 3 full distance races a year. But for a lot of our pro men, you think of the likes of someone like Jan Frodeno, and we're talking two, a validation race and then the real deal in October. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the qualification system will be. I mean, none of us know what that is yet. And you're right, it's going to make a big difference to next year's races and what races that a lot of the professional athletes do choose. But talking about races, how does a professional athlete, so obviously for a lot of age group athletes, they've got their normal jobs to go to, And racing is just something they do, and I don't just like to say for fun, but something, because a lot of our age group athletes take it quite seriously as well, and we've got some phenomenal age group athletes out there, but at the end of the day, they don't rely on racing financially like our professional athletes do. So obviously this first half of the year is gone, but have you and your coach actually sat down and actually written up a race schedule for the remainder of the year? Is that something that you want to do, knowing full well that at the end of the day there may not be any races, but is it something that you still plan for?
Yeah, of course we are. Right now sitting and waiting every day for the decision about Ironman Frankfurt, because that was actually the race.
Okay.
It's postponed, but not yet said whether it's going to take place or not. So until this decision is made, I am not thinking about other races. But of course, maybe I would prefer the European ones. So right now, if you think if they happen, I don't know, but maybe Hamburg, Klagenfurt, Austria, Ironman Austria, or Ironman Nice. So those three races would be possible for February, but of course I would definitely only do one, and if it's not if I'm not qualified after that, I wouldn't do another one, because then I'm doing five Ironmans. I prefer to start a normal season with a 70.3 race. So I'm really hoping for Challenge Submarine right now.
Yeah. Me too.
It feels like ages.
Right,
last time. So we are watching and looking up what about the decisions, but haven't made a race plan yet, as there are no clear decisions
made. And of course, you've raced really, really well at the championship before. Third place there.
I did have a time penalty last year and didn't find the penalty tent after, because I was after the bike, I rode over the line, so I had had to sit 30 seconds, but I didn't find the tent, or I didn't know where it was. So I lost, I guess, 1:30, and then I lost the fight about place about the second place. I really like that one, because you have the 20 meter drafting zone, or maybe this year it's even more, I don't know.
Might be, that's right, because it's only if we have the race, obviously it's just the professional athletes, so we can make it even longer if we need to, but it'll be always a very, very fair race. I like, that's what I love the most about that race there.
And of course it's a very fast bike part, which I like. So I did 2 hours 7 minutes for the 90K.
Wow, that's flying. I'm far out.
Be keen to do it a little bit faster. So I'm really hoping it's going to take place.
Me too. We've only got a couple of weeks to wait, because I know that they're going to make the final decision right at the beginning of July. So I'm really hoping that race goes ahead for sure. Now, Danny, I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, you're in a special situation, and I'm not saying you're the only one. There's quite a few of our professional female athletes out there that have children, but it's not a common thing. So obviously you have a 9-year-old son, you're a professional athlete. Let's think of the normal world, or what we knew as the normal world when, kids are at school. How difficult is it, though, for you to be a professional athlete, train, be a mother to Marlon, who's at school, obviously, in normal situations, but as a pro athlete, you have to travel. I mean, that's just the way it is. You need to travel to races. Do you have a good support network around you that you can use? So when you need to go to races, do you always take Marlon out of school and take him with you, or is he able to stay with grandparents? It's always really interesting for our listeners to know how a professional female athlete who is also a mother, how that you are able to balance the two.
Yeah, well, that was the way we did it when he was little. So I took him everywhere, and most of the time I took my sister with me.
Right.
Knew that he's in good hands, and I can do my training and not think about it. So that's the most important thing, or that stays until also when they get older. I think when you know that they are in good hands, you can concentrate on your own, and if they are not, it's not possible. Like, that was also hard for in the last 3 months when you know, he's sitting at home and doing his homeschooling alone, and I am here and tried to go for a run that didn't really feel good. That was just didn't feel right. I want him to also enjoy learning and schooling, and so that was really tough time. But I think normally we really do have a very good balance. So I have a really good family surrounding who's they are all helping, and of course he's getting bigger. I can't take him out of school, and it stays very hard to when I am on a training camp, and it is long to be away for 1 or 2 weeks. But then I think there are other jobs that are much harder. So when I am at home, I am really flexible and can spend my time as I want. So this is really a privilege, I think.
Yeah.
And we do have a lot of quality time, especially in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, that's right, exactly. I think we've all had a lot of quality time, that's for sure. And Danny, does it when you're obviously sitting down with your coach and planning out different races, are you more likely to stay put and do races in Europe rather than travel, for example, because it's just easier for you to then only take a week away for a race and come straight back?
Yeah, that's definitely one reason why I'm rather racing in Europe. When I started, what I was telling before, I really liked the fact of combining travel and racing. Travel and racing. So I did my first 70.3 in Cancun.
Oh, wow. Party central.
And I took the prize money to make the next trip. And it was at that time where you still could qualify with just one race. So I came second and qualified for the World Championship in Clearwater.
Oh, wow.
Took the prize money and... yeah, to travel there, and I really like that kind of lifestyle. But of course, this is not possible anymore. So we are usually really having quite a strict season plan. So I have to know where Marlon is or where he can go. Or, for example, now we have 6 weeks summer holidays, and I want to do a training camp, or the first training camp. So I'm doing 10 days of training camp, and he can go to my sister at that time, and and after that to his dad. So he's also having a good time, and then
that's good. Yeah,
that's when I know I can concentrate, and
So you've got you've got it worked out. Yeah, it sounds like you've got this completely under control. So it's good.
Yeah, and I think, which is also a very good thing, my coach, he's got 4 kids.
So he understands exactly.
He understands, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Super important. Far out. It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And talking about training camps, where is your favorite place to go?
If it wasn't that far away, I would definitely go back to Noosa and also to Wanaka.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, and 5 weeks.
Beautiful. Wanaka, even for me, I mean, Wanaka's literally only a 2.5 hour flight for me, obviously in New Zealand, but it is still one of the most spectacular places on this earth. I totally agree with you. Yeah. A little cold there right now. Yeah. I know Braden Curry, who lives there, it got down, I think he went for a swim in Lake Wanaka a couple of days ago. It was 6 degrees. So it's cold.
Yeah, I would go there in the summer.
Yeah, but summer only. That's right.
It's too far away. So for training camp, I prefer, my favorite island is Mallorca, which is only a 2 hour flight away, and it feels like home. I know every road there, and which also very nice was, I've been there for the first time this year, was Girona. This was February, and it felt like Mallorca, but without traffic. So I really liked the riding, and it's a beautiful place. But then I think I catch one of the last flights back home before the...
Wow. So when were you in Girona? Right before everything went crazy?
At the end.
Interesting. Look, I mean, obviously, Jan Frodeno lives there, Nick Castellin. There's quite... I know Laura Siddle spends a lot of time in Girona. I know Luke and Beth McKenzie were planning a huge European trip this year, and they were planning to base themselves in Girona. And it does look like a very special place, and it's almost, I think it's becoming like the Boulder of USA for triathletes. I know cyclists have been going to Girona for years, but it seems like a place that triathletes are really looking to go to.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You have to try.
I definitely want to try. I wish I could get on a plane tomorrow. Oh, I would love to go back to Spain for me. The last few years of my career, I spent, we lived in Marbella in Spain. We have quite a few good friends that live there, and I absolutely love Spain. I think it's one of my favorite European countries by far. I just love the lifestyle. So I'm not saying it's the greatest for training, but for me, at the end of my career, it was perfection.
Yeah, no, that's true. And also Australia, but that's for just going there for training camp. It's too far away.
It is. It's a long, I mean, Australia is a long way away from anything, let's be honest. Yeah. It's crazy. But, yeah, where we are here in Noosa, it's we don't really have a winter, so it's good for that. I mean, I know a lot of the New Zealanders come over here for our winter, and they treat it like a summer camp. So it just shows you we don't really know what winter is here on the Sunshine Coast. Now,
maybe if it's happening that Kona takes place and that I'm qualified, I might have to come.
You won't be the only one. So it's a good place to be. That's right. Perfect weather, perfect conditions here in January, February, almost identical to what Kona is. Yeah. Not much difference at all. But Danny, as a professional female long distance athlete in Germany, and I say this because obviously I've been going to Germany now, I think, for almost 15-16 years, do you feel there's a lot of pressure? Obviously, triathlon in Germany is big. I know you probably think there are other sports that are bigger, but for outsiders looking in, German triathletes actually, and I have to be careful how I say this, I'm not going to say you've got it easy because you don't, but it is a popular sport. You get looked after. You've got great sponsors. As we mentioned earlier, you know, Erdinger have looked after you since the beginning. And I know a lot of athletes from other countries look at the German athletes, male and female, and think, wow, you know, the German athletes have got it good. But with that, I mean, obviously you've got some phenomenal athletes, both male and female. What's the pressure like? Because obviously when you've got so many great athletes and great potential sponsorships available, what's the pressure like to continue to keep your sponsors and to continually keep performing?
Well, I think we definitely do have very good conditions, so that's definitely true. About the pressure, I think it's you always make it yourself. So
yeah, true.
Self-made, and it is definitely one of the biggest challenges the professional athletes do have to deal with. So I did have really hard times. So, for example, after 2018, which was a really good season, so I had the win in Roth and also Ironman Italy. I was qualified already for Kona, and I thought, well, now it's going to be easy to for the next season. But then I felt I put on a lot of pressure on myself, because I wanted to, of course, to improve, and to it's really hard to improve such a year. And so I think, yeah, this showed me that you really make it yourself, and the pressure. So I think that's something you have to learn, like everyone has. Also now, it's, of course, I want to be in the best shape of my life when the races are coming closer, like everyone does. But on the other hand, I think it's always about the balance. So we are not only athletes, but also human beings.
Yes, exactly.
And I want to do this for not only for the next season, but for
the years to come.
I don't know.
Yeah,
and I want to also enjoy, the rest of not just the training and the racing, but also enjoy the other things in life. And I think that's something the last 3 months showed. So they are not only bad things. We had to learn. That it's not always only about winning and getting better, and there are more important things. So I think it's always self-made. Yeah,
I like it. I just always, I mean, I remember it was an eye-opener when I first, I think I did challenge Roth for the first time in 2004, and I hadn't been a professional athlete that long, and that was certainly my first time to Europe. And I was blown away even back then with just the professionalism of the sport itself and the athletes involved, the professional athletes involved way back then in 2004 in Germany. And it was a real eye-opener for me. And I don't think, even though I'd been a professional athlete for a couple of years before then, I think I was kidding myself. I don't think I really understood exactly what it meant to be a professional athlete till I went to Germany for the first time, because I think the male and female athletes in Germany really understand what it's all about. And I think it's really helped the rest of the world realize what being a professional athlete is all about. So it's been a pretty cool journey for me personally as an athlete to see that progression. It's really interesting. And interesting for me because, I mean, obviously Australian athletes are renowned for being fairly laid back. That's not to say that they don't train just as hard as any other athletes in the world, but they have a fairly laid back attitude. And I know for a lot of Australian athletes, when they've gone to Germany for the Bundesliga for the first time, it's taken them some time to get into it because, you know, we used to joke when we come home from Germany about how all the German athletes, it was always about facts and figures and numbers. And it's like, this is crazy. Why can't we just go out and train because we love it? Or just who cares what our heart rate's saying, or who cares what the numbers are? But it's always about the factors. It's always about the figures. But you guys really did pave the way for what it takes to be a professional athlete and to be the best that you can be. So for me personally, Germany is one of those countries that really you're the key country for where our sport is today. For sure.
That's interesting, see it from that perspective. Well, I think it's always important to keep the balance between both. So
I should go
out for a run and just run.
For the love of running, exactly.
Don't take your watts all the time. But, of course, when it's getting race-specific, there need to be intervals in the right intensity. So you always have to keep the balance, because if you only do the number thing, I think you can be mentally
You go crazy. Yeah. Well, it's funny, Danny, because the first athlete that, for me personally, that broke that mold from that, just that all about numbers and every session had to have a purpose and you had numbers set for that particular session. And the first athlete that I met that seemed to stray away from that just a bit was Sebastian Kinlay, was Sebi. And he was an absolute breath of fresh air because he did it not only because he wanted to be the best, and he still does, but because he absolutely loved it as well. And because he does race with emotion as well as race because he wants to a certain outcome, for example. But so for me personally, Sebi was the first one to sort of break that traditional German mold where it was always about facts and figures and nothing else mattered. And then Sebi came on the scene. It's like, ah, yeah, this is perfect. And since then, yeah, it seems to have changed just a little bit. I mean, you know, when you've been in the sport as long as me, you do see this progression. And I think now a lot more athletes in Germany are racing with heart and with the head.
Yeah, so to speak.
So it's pretty cool. Now we've got just before I let you go, because I told you we'd run over time because I can't stop talking to you, and I have a bad habit with talking too long. We have got a few questions from listeners that we put out there, and one of them was, it's quite an interesting one from Jay. How did you know when it was time to go from age grouper to professional athlete? And it is a question that we get quite often. I mean, I started in the sport as an age group athlete. And, you know, when do you actually know that it's time to start racing professionally, or that this is what you want to do in life, you want to make it your profession?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And I think you first have to define a professional athlete.
Because yes, true.
In Germany, you get a professional license quite easy. So you have to be... Have to be a good athlete, but you can race in the professional fields quite easy. So for me, it was like I told, after I was in Nusa, I wanted to give it a try, and I wanted to see right from the beginning where can I be in the pro field. So I raced 70.3 Monaco, but I had a crash, so my brakes were broken and I was on the second place, and after that I thought, okay, I want to try, and I raced to, I traveled to Cancun, like I told, I did Cancun and then the World Championships in Clearwater. And but I didn't feel professional. I wanted to give it a try and see how, where can I be. And the first real professional year was 4 years later. So after I was 1 year in the newcomer team of Oettinger, and then started in 2013. I think when you have sponsors and or starting to, when it makes sense. So it's not all about the money. That's not what I'm saying. But
no,
when you feel it makes sense to really concentrate on that one thing. So when you don't do anything, when you don't have to do to work or do other things to save your living. So
supplement living. That's right.
And I think you cannot plan to become professional. It somehow has to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's an interesting, I mean, obviously I started as an age group athlete too, and if it hadn't have been for my husband now, who back then was my partner, I didn't have any intention of becoming a professional athlete. I was just going to do it for fun. And it wasn't until he put it in my head and told me that it could be possible. So it's interesting how everyone's got a different story. And then, of course, we've got athletes, Danny, that have never been age group athletes. They've just gone straight from, say, a professional swimming background straight into a professional triathlon.
Yeah.
A triathlon background.
I think it has to do a lot with your expectations. So if you only want to give it a try or just, do it for fun, of course you can do it, but that's not, like, I wouldn't say my first 3 years, they were not professional. But yeah, when you really have your goals and want to do it, then I think you can give it a try. Of course.
And now another question we've got is, and this is interesting because obviously with a little bit more time now at home, particularly now since March, Heather has written, do you incorporate any strength training or yoga into your weekly routine? Obviously, we know as a professional triathlete, you swim, bike, run. That is what you do week in, week out. But do you normally include a strength training or some sort of yoga or body movement routine?
Yeah, normally I do strength training during the winter, and then it's rather getting athletics and yoga during the season. Yeah, but now I haven't been in the gym for the last 3 months, we plan to do another strength block. So I'm just about to start. I've just been there yesterday for the first time.
Perfect.
Of course, I'm always doing athletics and core training and yoga, which you can do at home. But I don't have a home gym, so we're gonna start this from now again.
Yeah. So because the gyms of course have reopened now in Germany.
Yeah, they are reopened. Oh,
perfect. And then one from Quentin. Obviously, he states it's been a crazy year, but it's starting to look hopeful. As we said, we love that word, hopeful, that there will be some races taking place later this year. And have you already started thinking about this? I know we've touched on this in the call already. And where is your first racing looking likely to be?
Well, yeah, the hoping.
Hoping.
If they take place, the first race would be Challenge Submarine, and after that, yeah, I don't know. Maybe one or two 70.3 races if they take place in Europe, and then one of the Ironman races, Hamburg, Ironman Austria, or Ironman Nice, or Ironman Frankfurt if it
goes ahead.
And
that's purely to try and qualify for the Ironman World Championships in February. And one question Mark has written, is there a possibility that you will race Challenge Roth in 2021? That's a tough one.
A possibility, of course, there's always. It really depends on how it's all going ahead now in the second half of the year, because of course I wish I could do it, but I don't want to squeeze it in. So
no, if you go you want to do it properly, of course.
Yeah. And it's not going to be the fifth long distance race. Not definitely not, but
no.
Let's say if there are no races or if I'm not able to qualify, I might do a qualify race for October, and then there's a big chance for Roth as well, because I definitely want to go back. But this is too many.
Too many Rahe, I know. It's an interesting thing, though, Danny. I mean, obviously 2020, no races, but 2021, it's going to be fascinating to see what the professional athletes actually do. I mean, obviously we don't know what the qualification process is yet for Ironman and for the World Champs. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the pro triathletes – I'm sure there'll be many pro triathletes that just want to get out there and race, and we'll see some racing back to back to back to back to back. I mean, I know an athlete like Joe Skipper, it's not unusual for him to do 5 full-distance races in a year anyway. So I'm sure we're going to have that athlete that just wants to get out there and race every other weekend. And then you're going to have other athletes that just stick to the schedule and stick to what they know and what works for them. So I'm actually quite excited about 2021 because I just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting also to see if everyone everyone could deal with this situation. I mean,
absolutely. You've just, that's a really good point. I mean, we're just thinking that everyone's going to be fine and dandy, but it will be interesting to see what pro athletes actually haven't made it through that have just said, you know what, this is too much. I mean, I know there were quite a few athletes that are towards the end of their career, and they were using this year was their retirement year, and that's just been blown out of the window. I've got other female athletes that were looking to start a family next year. Yeah. This year was going to be a big year of racing, and then next year they start a family. So what happens to them now? So, you know, fascinating, really. We don't even think of this. We just think, oh, yeah, we'll just get through this year and then everything will start up as normal next year. But for some athletes, that's just not the case.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, it is I do want to make this decision by myself. I don't want the virus to...
No, to make the decision for you. Absolutely.
We'll definitely come back. But it's really, of course, it is frustrating. I'm in the, let's say, in the best age.
Yeah, you're in the prime of your career. You really are. That's true.
Yeah, there's also for me, there's family. Yeah, plans in the back of my head somewhere. So
absolutely,
it's really hard. But I think it's even harder for the Olympian athletes.
Yeah,
they don't know if it's next year or if it's in 5 years. So this is even.
It's crazy. At least, yeah, that's right. At least ours is only year by year.
Yeah.
A big difference. It's, yeah, and some things that I haven't even thought of. And, you know, I think I've thought of everything and then I'm like, oh, that's right. That's going to affect them as well. So it is going to be interesting, that's for sure. And I just hope, you know, as the mother hen of the triathlon world, I just hope that all the athletes make it back next year and that they can at least have one more year of racing before things change or that they take a different path. I know I'll definitely see you on the race course next year, which is very exciting. So that's good. And you're still so young. You've got years left, Danny, years left.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I hope to see you soon as well. Maybe in Daytona in December.
That would be, yeah. And that's one race that I know that if there's any race that we want to try and get to go ahead this year, it's Challenge Daytona, the PTO champs in December. So, yes, that's one that we are definitely crossing fingers and hoping it goes ahead. But, yeah, I know that the teams involved with that race are really working extremely hard to make sure that's going to be a phenomenal event for not just the age group athletes but obviously the professional athletes as well.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Danny, I won't leave you any longer. I told you it was going to be 45 minutes and we're already at for an hour, but that's just the way it is. I've always got lots of things to talk about to you, so it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
No problem. I really hope I get to see you at least sometime in 2020. That's for sure. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm planning for, that I get to see you in 2020. So stay safe till then, and thank you so much for talking.
Yeah, stay safe. Stay healthy. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.